Okay, backtracking a little bit to Casey's first managerial job in Worcester in the Eastern League. That was surrounded by all kinds of weird circumstances. Tell that story just a little bit here.
Well, he was working for Judge Emil Fuchs, the owner of the Boston Braves, who was a guy as an owner who was way over his head. Fuchs was apparently kind of a decent guy who was actually had been the club attorney for the Giants for a long time. And like everybody else involved with the Giants in the early days, had just a deep affection for Christy Mathewson. And Mathewson had come back from World War I in really bad shape. He had been gassed in an accident. His lungs were wrecked, and he perhaps as a result of that, caught tuberculosis and was basically wasting away. And everybody said, you know, here's this great baseball mind and this wonderful fellow going to waste. Like, let's find something for him to do. So this guy, Fuchs, bought the Boston Braves pretty much so Mathewson could run it. The problem was that Mathewson wasn't really up to it, didn't turn out to be very good at it, and basically spent, you know, continued to waste away and died, leaving Fuchs with this club that he couldn't really afford and didn't know what to do with. Fuchs made himself manager for a year trying to figure out what to do, you know, didn't believe in bunting, for example, because that was not sporting, so you don't try to win a game that way. And essentially, after, and this is also a great example, a great learning thing for Casey was, in 1923, the Giants played the Yankees in the World Series, and the Giants won only two games, both of which were on game-winning home runs by Casey Stengel. After which, John McGraw turned around and traded Casey, his pupil, to the Braves, because that's Casey was a, you know, an aging outfielder, but he was a hot commodity at that moment. So again, you cut your best friend if you have to keep your to make your team good.
Right.
Well, Casey was clearly reaching the end of the line and had interest in managing. That McGraw had stimulated this in him, and Fuchs didn't want to have to pay an extra guy to manage. So when he had this opening at Worcester, he sent Casey down there. The great thing that happened to Casey in Worcester, besides the fact that he got his managerial career started, was that he met George Weiss, who was an operator of an independent team down there. And George Weiss was somebody who understood the business of baseball very well and had a big future in baseball ahead of him. And he and Casey hit it off really, really well, connected at a basic level. And they were able to really talk and really listen to each other, George on the business side, Casey on the tactical end, and develop a mutual respect that would come into play for both of them over and over again throughout the rest of their lives. The Worcester experience ended in a rather strange way because, you know, it was low in the minors, and McGraw helped Casey get a job with Toledo of the International League. And in those days, the top minor leagues, the International League, the American Association, the Pacific Coast League, were really close to the majors and in some cases probably were a little bit better. So this was a great opportunity for Casey. The problem was that because of the reserve clause, Fuchs still owned Casey. So this is what Casey did to get out of the situation. When he had been sent down to Worcester, because he was running all of the small operation, they officially not only made him player manager but club president. So club president Stengel released player Stengel, fired the manager Stengel, and then resigned and went off to Toledo. And that's how he got out of there.
Right. I love that story. I got a chance to hear Steve tell that story to me when we were driving up to Cooperstown to go do some research on these photos for this book. You mentioned George Weiss, and that really was my next question. Talk about how Weiss kept popping up for him. I think it's almost uncanny that whenever Stengel seemed to need a job or was in transition, Weiss just managed to come out of the woodwork.
Well, in fact, that's exactly what Stengel said when he was inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Oh, really? Okay.
Thank Weiss for finding out, hearing about it whenever he was unemployed, and then employing him again. Weiss really believed in Stengel. Again, they had talked long enough for him to realize that whatever Stengel's weird syntax and sense of humor, there was a real baseball brain operating under there, and he wanted to use him. The problem was that for a long time, he wasn't in that position. In 1932, he got hired by the Yankees to start their minor league system off, which officially happened with the purchase of the newer club of the International League. Ed Barrow, who was the quote-unquote team secretary of the Yankees, the general manager, I guess, didn't necessarily like him much. I mean, he knew he was probably the best guy for the job, but didn't like Weiss much. And they had Joe McCarthy as their manager. So, and he was winning pennant after pennant. He wasn't necessarily going to go anywhere. But as time went on and Barrow aged and was replaced by Dale bought the team from Rupert's heirs along with Dan Topping and Del Webb. And Barrow got out of the picture, and McCarthy's alcoholism and pressure from McPhail began to tell on McCarthy. Weiss would kind of bring up Stengel and say, hey, how about we consider this guy for our managerial position? And they would sort of scoff at that. At that time, Casey had been with the Boston Braves for a long time, which had really wrecked his reputation, at least on the major league level. And they would say, that guy, he's a clown. But behind the scenes, Weiss was helping Stengel. Casey, after leaving Boston, had begun to rehabilitate his reputation by going down and winning the American Association pennant with the Milwaukee Brewers. Then he resigned that job for reasons we won't get into now, and Weiss got him a job with the Yankees' top farm team at Kansas City in 1945. From there, he helped recommend Stengel to the Oakland Oaks of the Pacific Coast League, which was a team that had a working agreement with the Yankees, and helped him get that job. And that, the Pacific Coast League, again, was a better place than many major league cities, and really was a hair's breadth away from being a major league in and of itself. It just lacked the ownership and the sort of vision of a Ben Johnson to turn it into a major league. So Casey went there and he won, and that made him palatable to the majors again. And at the same time, Weiss finally became GM of the Yankees, and the timing was right. And of course, Weiss then begged Stengel to come out of retirement in 1962 and manage the Mets. So they were together for all those years.
Yeah, that's almost like a marriage. It's interesting, though, I think that at the point when Stengel was hired by the Yankees, you know, the knock on him was that he'd never won anywhere, but in fact, you know, he had won minor league championships in three different spots. And you note that you say something to the effect of, you know, and you just alluded to it here, that he often had better ball players and better capitalization in these stops in Milwaukee and Oakland, particularly, than he did in Brooklyn and in Boston.
Right, and he won in Toledo too, actually. In those days, unlike now where the players are, you know, millionaires and don't need to do anything after they retire, they would do the opposite of what they did to get to the major leagues. Just like they played their way up, they would play their way down. And since the major leagues were smaller, there were a lot of guys who were pretty good players who just couldn't find a job.
Right.
And, I mean, a great example is Nick Etten, who was the wartime first baseman for the New York Yankees, and excelled in that atmosphere, but couldn't quite cut it when Joe DiMaggio's of the world came back.
Right.
Well, he went down to Oakland and was a real slugger for Casey down there. Like, he had players both of up-and-coming prospects and guys who were just as close to being major leaguers and probably could have been under other circumstances. And he manipulated those guys very well. I mean, look, the truth about managing is, I think that this is really underestimated in every sport, is there is no manager who's going to take a team in baseball which has the ability, you know, has talent to go 70-92 and turn it into a 92-70 team. Now, a genius manager might take that 70-92 team and coax it to 75 wins, but not to 92, not to 100. So, I mean, and Stengel managed essentially the 1930s and 1940s equivalents of the Montreal Expos or the Tampa Bay Devil Rays, just teams that were chronically underfunded and could not move forward no matter what he did. And in fact, were doomed to get worse because as soon as players got good, they had to trade them off. In fact, I would say that the most underfunded Tampa Bay or Montreal club could have easily outpaced those teams on talent just because they had access to the farm system and to the draft and so forth. And those were things that those teams didn't have. You needed money to get better. It was the only way to sign players to get better. So
right.
He just had a bad draw. But yeah, when he went to the minors and had these teams that were well attended, particularly in Oakland, again, in the Pacific Coast League, they used to, you know, outdraw the weaker teams in the major leagues, like the St. Louis Browns and so forth. And as the national demographic shifted west, they only got stronger, which is why the majors eventually went out there to forestall them from becoming a third major league. So yes, Stengel definitely demonstrated his ability in those circumstances.
Now, in Oakland, he discovered a local boy named Billy Martin. Talk about that relationship a little bit.
Well, Casey was just very impressed by Billy Martin's attitude. There's part of it is that Casey never had any kids. I mean, he had a very happy and successful marriage, but no offspring came out of it for reasons that aren't particularly clear. And I think he looked for players to sort of adopt and to invest in emotionally. And Billy Martin didn't have a father. and was definitely a troubled youth. I mean, the things that he did, the scraps he got into as an adult were definitely anticipated in his childhood. I mean, heck, he was kicked off of his high school team for fighting. But he was a guy who believed he was smart right from the very beginning and played hard and just impressed Stengel with his attitude somehow. And Stengel just tolerated him even when he talked back. He just would laugh it off. You know, that kid, ha ha ha. You know, and there was really a connection there. He really respected Billy for, even at a very young age, understanding baseball. And Stengel worked with him personally, hit him grounders. Martin knew the team medic for the Oaks, and he was the guy who brought Martin around to Stengel, and there was just this connection there, and Stengel really helped make Martin a major league ball player.
Okay. And then he took him to New York. Did he take him to New York in 49? Or?
No, he didn't, and I think Billy was kind of cheesed off by that. He expected to go right up with Casey. And
okay.
He knew that Casey was going to go up because Casey knew pretty early. George Weiss didn't like Bucky Harris at all and didn't like the job he was doing. So chances are Casey knew as early as 1948 that in 1949 he'd be running the Yankees. And he told this to Billy. And Billy thought he'd probably be going right up with Casey, but they waited until 1950, and they bought Martin and Jackie Jensen from the Oaks at the same time.
Okay. Kind of getting towards the more overarching wrap-up here. What was the most surprising thing you learned about Stengel in the process of writing this book?
I think that the thing that you always learn when doing these kinds of books, if you're a biography, if you're objective at all, is the complexity of the person that you're talking about, which means that in the course of, and maybe this is sort of a more philosophical answer than you're looking for, but the thing is that there are times as you go through a person's life and get into the minutiae of it, that they will impress you with their humanity, their generosity, their goodness, and other times they will disappoint you with their meanness, their cruelty, and their selfishness. And, I mean, this is how all human beings are. And, of course, surveying a guy like Casey over the course of a very long life, there are things that are very admirable and things that you don't understand why he did them. For example, he had, with the Yankees in the late 50s, he had a young outfielder named Norm Seaburn, who later turned out to be a pretty good player, but just couldn't play for Stengel with the Yankees because Stengel was hypercritical of him. And in a key World Series game, Seaburn was playing the outfield. He missed two fly balls. And as he's running in from the outfield, Stengel is standing on the top of the dugout steps, pantomiming him, sort of drunkenly stumbling and weaving about the outfield, missing this ball, humiliating this guy in front of all the attendees and whatever television there was. Now, why did he do that? I don't know. I mean, that seems pretty gratuitous. At the same time, there are stories like the one that Ryan Duren told me, where they were down in Washington for a game, and Duren was becoming very popular, being this sort of fireballing, sort of Rob Dibble-style reliever, and which is not necessarily denigrating Duren's personality as being like this. But he had pitched in a few games before, and Stengel said, hey, you're going to have the day off, so just don't worry about it, you're not pitching today. But about the seventh inning, he said, Mr. Duren, will you take off your jacket, please, and walk down to the bullpen? And Duren said, well, what's the deal? I thought I wasn't pitching today. And Casey said, well, you're not, but you're a star in this league now, and these people down here in Washington deserve to see a star like you, so I want you to show them your uniform number and walk down to the bullpen. And he did that just so Duren could get a hand. And I think that's tremendous in terms of bolstering a young player's confidence.
Right. That's interesting.
And again, the way that he took on Billy Martin was, again, very generous. Because, look, Billy Martin was not a ball player of great skill, as he demonstrated. He was not an impact player in the major league, except for the World Series, where he tends to go nuts and, you know, hit 380 or 400 or 500.
Right, the real Mr. October.
Yeah, he really was. He really made a couple of World Series for the Yankees. But, you know, in the regular season, he was a 250 guy without much power and without any patience. It would be shocking if Billy Martin was a big walks guy. The way that he sent Bill Scourin to dancing school. He literally sent Bill Scourin to dancing school.
Dancing, the moose.
Yeah.
The dancing moose.
Yeah, well, I mean, he wasn't a moose. He wasn't called moose because he was a moose, but that was the upshot of it anyway. I mean, he just didn't have good footwork on the bag, and Casey said, go to dancing school.
That's amazing.
I think that's fantastic and innovative, and there are many examples of those kinds of things. And again, he would bring ball players home. He would buy them food and beer out of his own pocket when they did well. Most surprising in terms of just, like, something I didn't really anticipate. started. I thought he was pretty smart just based on the things that he said, but again, the complexity with which he managed and the basic logic with which he managed really isn't apparent unless you pay attention to it, and just how much further ahead he is than say a Tony La Russa. I think Casey Stengel could manage circles around a Tony La Russa.
Okay, that brings me to my next question. You know, are there any managers out there right now who remind you of Stengel? Not obviously not personality wise, but in terms of, you know, the way they manage and the imagination with which they approach, say, you know, utilizing the whole of their roster. Do you see anybody out there who has that?
I've been asked this question a lot, and no, I don't.
Okay.
Maybe I'm not. There's somebody out there who I don't see often enough, to whom I'm not giving enough credit. But I don't see it. I think managers are much more, you know, like I said, they sort of ritualize what they're going to do, and they don't want to improvise. They can't think out of the box. Look, Joe Torre's been a very successful manager with the Yankees, and there's a lot about Joe Torre to admire. But how many games has Joe Torre lost, particularly, again, the most famous one, and one I personally don't ever think I'll get over, the game, game four in the 2003 World Series, where Mariano Rivera was sitting in the bullpen, and he brought in Jeff Weaver to lose the ball game. You know, that Casey Stengel wouldn't have done that.
Right.
Or another example is, this is going back a few years, but in the year 1999, I believe it was, Bobby Valentine had been pinch-hitting for Ray Ordonez all season long. And then they went into the playoffs with the Braves. And for some reason, Bobby Valentine said, I am going down the line with this guy. I will not pinch-hit for him during this series. At which point, Ordonez went 1-for-22 in the series, stranded about 1,012 runners, and the Mets lost the series to the Braves. Well, again, Casey wasn't going to let that happen. He was going to pinch-hit constantly if he had to, if he had to play you for some reason. If he thought Ray Ordonez's defense was, and I doubt that he would have, you know, worth playing, he never would have let a guy like that go 1-for-22.
Right.
The guy would have been, you know, either Slaughter would have been in the game pinch hitting for him in the fifth inning. And so I just don't see it. I don't know who it is who's not afraid to think out of the box.
Right. What do you think Stengel would do if you handed him the current Yankee roster? What do you think the biggest changes he would make in terms of how he deployed that team?
I think that he would be, first of all, going up to the front office and saying, what do we have in the minors that we can use that's better than what we have? He'd be identifying which relievers he could use, and then saying, when that time came to call somebody else up, look, don't give me Scott Proctor for the sixth time. Let me see somebody I haven't seen before, because maybe I can work with him.
Right.
Maybe there's something I can teach him, or a situation in which I can use him that will work. He also would cut the number of pitchers, because he really wanted to have a big bench. He said that he would love to have 12 pitchers on his team, but he needed room for the actual players, and so he wouldn't have, you know, two lefties in the pen necessarily. He might not have worried about that, because again, he understood that you don't need to have the 15th best pitcher on your roster who's a left-hander just because he's a left-hander. And I would think A-Rod would be playing shortstop and third, maybe, you know, I mean, different places every day probably, but you know, wherever we're, Derek Jeter would have been tried in center field by now. All of those things.
Interesting. Well, that wraps up the questions that I have on this book. I think it's a great book. It really approaches the subject in a novel way. I think everybody knows that Stengel won all these titles with the Yankees, but they don't really have much of an idea of how he got to be the Casey Stengel that we all know in terms of his style of managing. So I think you've done a great job with this book, and I think it's really something that's going to be on everybody's bookshelf for a long time. So thanks a lot for agreeing to this interview, and best of luck with the book.
No, thank you, and I hope to hear many more Jay Jaffe Futility interviews.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Steve.